Welcome to the Divorce Hour with Alyssa Panitz. We want to support and comfort anyone going through this painful journey and be the guiding light so many people are looking for. This month marks 2 years since the Divorce Hour made its debut on the air. And in that time, we have talked about and tackled anything and everything that can happen before, during, and after a divorce to help you survive and thrive from this transition. We have also discussed many high-profile and celebrity divorces because the stars, in many ways, are just like you and me. Despite their fame, fortune, and famous friends, at the end of the day, they too go through heartbreak and difficult times. And let's go back to that word, time. I decided to go on the internet to look up the actual definition of time, and it said, the indefinite continued progress of existence and events in the past, present, and future regarded as a whole. Now, let's break this down, because this is more powerful than you think. And let's start with the words indefinite continued progress. Think of this as moving forward. And don't say to me, I can't do it, because you can. Recently, I interviewed actor and director Anson Williams from the TV series Happy Days for my divorce column in Authority magazine. Not only did Anson's 30-year marriage come to an end, but in 2006, Anson was also diagnosed with stage 2 colon cancer. And cancer is a frightening word. Now, the reason I spoke with him is because Anson just got remarried for a third time. When I asked Anson, is third time really a charm? Because most people would probably run in the other direction at just the thought of a third trip down the aisle. Anson said, you have to move forward. You have to live and embrace every precious moment. If you meet someone who makes you happy, why wouldn't you steal and enjoy these times we only get once? Well put. Anson worked really hard to keep his history where it belonged, in the past, so he can find happy days and feel the sunshine with a wonderful partner. And you can too. The definition of time also makes reference to progress. And now is your chance to make progress and develop the life you want and include the people you want to share it with. We all have a past. We've all been hurt. We've all been through divorce. And yes, they are painful. You've probably cried over your one-time partner at the end of your marriage. But finding your way to a better tomorrow will have you singing happy days and remembering there are many new beginnings. You can make so many wonderful memories, and guess what? Opportunity is right in front of you. So take hold of it. Don't go anywhere because we will be right back with our first guest after this commercial break. Attorney Anthony Diaz is a regular here at the Divorce Hour and devotes a lot of time to educating people about the benefits of mediation and the collaborative process. But if neither of those options are feasible because one or both sides in a divorce action are unable to settle the open matters at hand, the case will go in front of a judge and into the court system. Now, if you think you're going to get your day of reckoning, think again. In fact, consider yourself warned, and Anthony is about to explain why. Anthony is the founder of a very successful Florida law firm that bears his name. In addition to having a background as a certified public accountant, Anthony is also a trained arbitrator, parent coordinator, litigator, mediator, and certified in the collaborative process. Anthony earned the nickname the Peacemaker because Anthony instills calm to highly emotional situations such as divorce. Anthony, welcome.
Great to be here, Alyssa. Thank you so much.
Always great to have you. So what can happen if a couple who are going through a divorce subject themselves to having their case brought into a court because the matters cannot be worked out with the attorneys?
Yeah, that's a great question and a good reminder for people who are thinking of going to court is just to remember the movie War of the Roses. And that was an extreme outcome of people going to court, and it's not quite like that in real life, but there are a lot of unintended consequences that I want everyone to know about, Alyssa. You know, people say that they want their day in court. Well, you really have to be careful what you ask for, because there's a number of reasons not to go to court and outcomes. So one of them is the length of the case. When you're in the court system, you have no idea how long your case is going to take. And the reason is there's a lot of cases in court, and there's a lot of matters within your case that the court is probably going to want to hear. So that's kind of out of your control. Another point to remember is you may need to appear if there's a hearing, and you're definitely going to have to be there if there's a trial, and it may have to be in person. You have to wait around. You have to come back sometimes. So there's a time element, your time, that's going to have to be taken into consideration. When you're in court, you might not be able to present your side. You know, the court rules before and during the trial, and that might limit what the judge actually sees and hears. You know, all evidence has got to be admissible. If not, the court's not going to consider it. Sometimes trials are held over a day. You don't have enough time, and you have to come back. And it creates gaps in everybody's schedule because you can't get back timely. What happens then? Well, at the end of the trial, if your case takes four or five different times to go to court, the court may not remember everything that's been testified, and that could have an outcome in your decision, in the judge's decision. At the end of the day, the judge is going to make the final decision. And a lot of times you don't really have a say in the outcome. You may testify, but whatever the court decides is what the court decides. You know, Alyssa, judges are human, and they have good days and not so good days. But at the end of the day, they're going to make a decision. They're going to follow the law as they see it. And you may or may not like the outcome. It may take a while for the court to issue its final outcome, and that could be months. I've had some cases where it's taken years. What happens if there is after an outcome? Well, somebody may appeal that, and it's going to take even longer. And the one part that really stands out for cases that go to court, Alyssa, is very often those cases will come back at some point by the person who didn't get the outcome they wanted. And guess what? The whole court carousel I just explained starts all over again. That's why choosing the many out-of-court outcomes that people have available to them really helps them achieve a resolution that they've fully participated in without all the downsides I described.
Yeah, and I love all these examples that you just listed, especially time. How can some of those really impact a person's life? And some of the things that I was jotting down were like their job, the cost, and also their mental and emotional state.
Yeah, there are so many other areas of your life that are affected when you go to court. The job is really the most obvious. Many times you have to take time off. Courts happen during the day. It's not like you can ask the court to schedule it for after work. It takes place during the workday. Then what happens? Well, if you take off time, work doesn't get done. Well, if work doesn't get done, you could lose pay, or you have to use your vacation time in order to be off from work. When you're in court, it's a very distracting time, Alyssa, and it affects your work. It affects your job performance. It's distracting. You may lose your job because if you have to take up too much time or if you're too distracted, or you may lose an opportunity to advance in your job because if you're distracted, you're not doing a good job. Do you think your employer is going to really want to promote you, even if they see that this is a temporary situation? Financially, you get affected financially. Your debts may not get paid. It can affect your credit score. You may have to use your savings. You may not be able to contribute to your retirement. You may need a second job. You talked about your mental health. being in court and going through a divorce is like a roller coaster. You have the ebbs and flows of the case, and you go up and down as your case goes up and down, and it's hard to focus. Your children are affected because they see you affected. They see you before and after a court hearing or trial. It could affect how you speak about the other parent. Do you say how you're going to beat them, or you beat them in court, or do you talk down about the other parent if you didn't get an outcome that you wanted in court? So you have all these other areas, not just the cost of going to trial, that can affect you.
And when you go to trial, you have to present evidence, and those attorneys could call you round the clock with things they need to present to the court. That must also impact a person because they may not be able to enjoy any aspect of their life, such as seeing friends, if they're working all the time trying to get the attorneys what they need.
Absolutely. You know, your life is really not your own at that point. It's the courts, it's the attorneys, and it affects you. It affects your relationships. Really, it affects every area of your life.
Yeah, and one thing that you talked about is how expensive a situation like this can be. So if a person realizes, look, there is just no way I can get more money, but I understand that this matter has to continue forward, can a person represent themselves in Florida? And if so, what is your number one tip for somebody to do that?
Sure. So my one tip I would leave people is to do your research. The clerks can't help you. The court's not allowed to help you. So go and do your research. I would also recommend, if you don't want to hire an attorney to handle your whole case, go and hire them for a consultation. Give them the facts of your case. Help them, have them advise you. They can help you do that. So if you decide to do it on your own, you know, you have all the information you need. You've done the research. You know how to fill out the forms, and that will give you the best chance of having a good outcome. What you don't want is doing this by yourself, not getting any help, and getting a final judgment, and then realizing that something is missed. It's like the old saying, you can't unring the bell. So get some help, get a consultation. It'll be well worth it.
And if people do want a consultation with you, Anthony, how do they get in touch with you?
They can go on my website, anthonydiazlaw.com. They can email me at anthony@anthonydiazlaw.com. You can call me also at 407-212-7807.
Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Anthony Diaz Esquire is a family law and collaborative divorce attorney and Florida certified family law mediator specializing in resolving disputes easily, effortlessly, and amicably. Anthony Diaz is known as the peacemaker. Anthony is one of 25 individuals worldwide selected for the Leadership Academy of the International Academy of Collaborative Professionals. He's passionate about helping others to resolve conflict with compassion and have relationships with passion and purpose. Anthony's also an international speaker whose mission and purpose is to help families in moving on from their divorce with dignity. Anthony uses his experience as a former CPA, as well as his peacemaking and mediation skills to resolve his cases. Many times this can be done without going to court, avoiding the stress and uncertainty of litigation, and not allowing the judge to make the final decision. Contact Anthony Diaz at peacefuldivorcenow.com. That's peacefuldivorcenow.com. peacefuldivorcenow.com.
Celebrity divorces and splits have been trending in the news. Kevin Costner, Kyle Richards, Tori Spelling, Jenna Wolf, and Ricky Martin. In Kevin's case, the term prenuptial agreement keeps coming up because he and his estranged wife signed one back in 2004. But what if a couple doesn't have one and years later they decide to sign what's called a postnuptial or mid-marriage agreement, which is a contract you sign after tying the knot? Do those carry the same weight? And are they enforceable under the law? Joining us to explain is Rebecca Freenow with Mendelbaum Barrett and contributor to us here at the Divorce Hour. Rebecca focuses on all aspects of family law and is also highly experienced in drafting prenuptial and postnuptial agreements for couples seeking this legal document as a layer of protection should the marriage end in divorce. Rebecca, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. So in New Jersey, are prenuptial agreements enforceable as well as postnuptial or mid-marriage agreements?
So prenuptial agreements, Alyssa, are generally enforceable as long as you meet the statutory requirements. I say generally because, again, you have to meet the statutory requirements. So as long as you do, they're probably enforceable. Now, the same cannot be said for postnuptial. And that's not to say that all prenups are enforceable and all postnups are not. But the courts actually look at postnups through a much different lens. And if you think about it for a second, it makes sense why. Prenups, as you said, are agreements that are signed before the marriage. Postnups are agreements that are signed after the marriage. When it comes to negotiating a prenup, if things fall apart, if someone doesn't like it and doesn't want to sign, they can walk away. The marriage won't occur. However, in a postnup context, that's very different. You have two people who are already married. So because of that, in New Jersey, postnups get a heightened level of scrutiny as a result of the fact that it was entered into by spouses. Because courts here look at it and feel that the spouses, in their relationship, have a level of confidentiality and trust. We trust one another. We have confidence in our spouses here. So because of that, courts sit back and say there's an inherently coercive aspect of postnups that we really must be sensitive to. So again, at the end of the day, it's not to say that all prenups are enforceable and all postnups are not, but when it comes to postnups, and sometimes we refer to those as mid-marriage agreements, they are in essence, the exact same thing, these postnups require a special assessment, a higher level of scrutiny to ensure that one spouse, quite frankly, isn't taking advantage of the other.
But what if both sides were represented by an attorney, not under duress, and were open to signing a prenuptial agreement? Are you saying that in New Jersey, there is the possibility that still, and I stress the word still, this document would not be valid?
Yes, there's absolutely, believe it or not, a possibility. So let's take a step back and think about what I was saying before about that heightened level of scrutiny. If you have the situation you laid out, both sides have an attorney, there's a financial disclosure, no one feels their duress, could a court set it aside? Yes. Because here in New Jersey, in order for a postnuptial, or again, mid-marriage, sometimes we use those terms interchangeably, agreement to be valid, courts go through that heightened level of scrutiny, that special assessment I referred to earlier. And there's case law on this, and this case law, believe it or not, actually dates back to the late 90s. What the case law tells us is that the court first must look to the facts and circumstances of the case and figure out whether or not there was that sort of marital crisis, that breaking point where someone said, you know what, this marriage isn't working, but let's try and work things out. Let's try and reconcile. But in the meantime, let's enter into this agreement. Of course, again, are going to look for that marital crisis. The second thing that courts are actually going to look at is whether the agreement was fair and equitable both when it was made and when it was enforced. So you can see in that assessment that this is a higher level of scrutiny than you often see in other situations. By way of example, if people going through a divorce decide to enter into a marital settlement agreement instead of proceeding to trial, it's a public policy in the state of New Jersey to enforce agreements entered into voluntarily and without duress between spouses. So a court's not going to look at a marital settlement agreement to see if the marriage was broken down and to see whether it was fair and equitable both when it was signed and when it was enforced. Again, a very different circumstance. But when it comes to these post-nups, because we are concerned about the inherently coercive nature of the post-nups, the court in case law requires this two-step analysis, as I like to describe it. And again, it's important to understand why. When you look at a post-nup, and again, all of this explanation is as to post-nups here in New Jersey, I'm mindful that in other jurisdictions, post-nups may be presumptively enforceable. Here in New Jersey, again, as you're learning, that's not necessarily the case. So be very mindful of where you live and speak to a professional that's experienced in this field before entering into or even considering one of these agreements. But back to the post-nup itself. We do draw a distinction between that sort of inherently coercive, naughty mid-marriage agreement that courts don't want to see, where I'll give you a fact pattern. Perhaps the spouses have just had their first child, and spouse A presents spouse B, who perhaps had, you know, a difficult time adjusting to parenthood, with a postnuptial agreement saying, hey, I'd like to limit your alimony claims and equitable distribution claims. Can you sign this? And they just sign away as they were somewhat vulnerable. Again, inherently coercive. That's much different than the circumstances that I referred to earlier when there was a marital crisis. We call those reconciliation agreements. And the court actually does draw a distinction, believe it or not, between, I'll call it the post-nup or mid-marriage, and reconciliation agreements. A reconciliation agreement is one entered into when the marital relationship had genuinely deteriorated to the brink of an indefinite separation or suit for divorce. That's why, if you're looking at these post-nups, and to go back to your original question, what about both sides being represented by an attorney, not under duress, they were open to signing a post-nup, if that couple can look at their situation and say, you know what, I filed a complaint for divorce, or perhaps I moved out and got my own residence, or I'm sleeping on the couch, and we're going to proceed with a divorce, but we want to try and reconcile, that couple may then be able to establish that their document is, in fact, valid because they can show that sort of marital crisis. So again, the end of the day, are post-nups always enforceable? No. There is this higher level of scrutiny, and it's really important to understand that because in order for the agreement to be valid, you have to show that there's been that marital crisis and that the agreement is fair and equitable when made and when enforced.
So if somebody fails to disclose assets when they sign the prenup, the postnup could be automatically tossed out.
I'm not sure if I want to say automatically, but could it happen? Absolutely. And the reason I would actually say that, because you bring up a great point, in a prenup, in order for it to be valid and enforceable here in New Jersey, there has to be full and fair disclosure of all assets. So say in your example, a couple doesn't do that in their prenup. Their prenup's probably invalid unless they waived that right to disclosure, which most people wouldn't and don't. Then they try to correct it with a postnup. That's not going to cut it. You can't bootstrap the viability of a prenup with a postnup. And you touch on a really important issue when dealing with prenups, quite frankly. It's important to understand that here in New Jersey, if you have a prenuptial agreement, you're negotiating a prenuptial agreement, that's a standalone document. Don't sit back and think that you can absolutely change its terms during your marriage. That's not the case. So no one should go into the prenup negotiation thinking that it's an easily changeable document 6 months after they got married or a year after they got married. Again, you can't bootstrap one with the other. So again, to your point, you're absolutely correct. If a prenup's going to be thrown out and you're trying to bootstrap it with that postnup, probably not a great idea.
And, you know, you brought up something really interesting that I want to circle back on because I know we're running out of time. What if the postnup was drafted in another state, let's say New York, because the couple used to live there, but then that same couple moved to New Jersey where they currently reside and now have decided to get a divorce? Will New Jersey honor the postnup document from a different state during a divorce action?
Yes, New Jersey can. So bottom line, yes, New Jersey can. We do give full faith and credit to documents drafted in accordance with the laws of other states. So what New Jersey will first do is look to see if the postnuptial agreement drafted in New York, in your example, was drafted in accordance with New York laws. And if it was, New Jersey is likely to enforce it and uphold it, so long as it doesn't violate any public policy here in New Jersey. But again, we do give credence to documents drafted lawfully in other states. But to anybody here living in New Jersey thinking about postnups, again, go meet with a seasoned professional. Do not count on the viability of these documents. They are subject to heightened scrutiny, and it's important to understand that.
If people do want to draft them, are they expensive to do?
Again, it depends on the complexity of the document. I generally recommend that people do financial disclosures akin to that you would do in the prenup context. So you should involve an attorney, do your disclosure, and work through that process. It's worth it in the end if you're trying to have a viable document.
Rebecca, for people who want to continue this conversation, how do they get in touch with you?
My name is Rebecca Freno, and I'm counsel with Mandelbaum Barrett in Roseland, New Jersey. My firm's webpage is mblawfirm.com. Check it out.
Rebecca Freno, thank you so much for joining us. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this commercial break.
Contact Rebecca Freno, counsel in the family practice of Mandelbaum Barrett PC of Roseland, New Jersey. Rebecca Freno devotes her practice exclusively to family law, and she has substantial experience in mediation, arbitration, and litigation of family law matters. Over a decade of experience within the field, Rebecca is part of the family practice with combined decades of experience in this area, and they have a well-known reputation of being zealous advocates who instill confidence in their clients and protect their interests. Rebecca Freno restores order to the chaos that can be caused by divorce and other tumultuous events for families. Mandelbaum Barrett PC has over 90 years of experience in providing their clients with the highest level of personal hands-on attention. Contact Rebecca Freno at 973-243-7978, 973-243-7978, or visit us at mblawfirm.com. That's mblawfirm.com.
Oscar winner Kevin Costner and his wife Christine Baumgartner are in the middle of a bitter divorce in California. Prior to tying the knot in 2004, the couple signed a prenuptial agreement, which is a written and signed contract by both parties before they say, I do. Now, in this document, each side lists and states the things they will keep, such as separate property, control of a company they started, financial accounts, and in terms of money, a prenup will also include language, how much each side will keep and receive in the event a couple splits. According to published reports, Christine is challenging their prenup and not abiding by the terms in this legal document. Well, here to explain prenups and what you need to know about them is attorney Daryl Wyman, who is also a regular contributor to The Divorce Hour. Daryl is founder of the Austin, Texas law firm Wyman & Associates, where she and her team specialize in all aspects of family law, including custody, division of assets, child support, pre- and postnuptial agreements, and domestic violence. In addition to her sharp legal skills, Daryl is the founder of Divorce Resource and author of the book, Your Post-Divorce Journey, Back to Yourself. Daryl, welcome.
Thanks, Alyssa.
Now, in Texas, are prenups valid even if they were created in another state?
Yes. So it's basically a contract, and usually in the contract, it will state what law controls the contract. But so, for example, if it's a California prenup and the parties are getting divorced in Texas, a Texas court will uphold the California prenup, but they will apply California law, not Texas law, just depending on what it says in the prenup.
Now, Christine is claiming that Kevin was trying to unfairly kick her out of their California home, and a judge ordered, just to update people, that she does have to vacate the residence by next month. But the judge in this case, prior to us learning this new information, claimed that this is without merit. What does it mean, without merit?
He's not making a finding that the prenup is or is not valid, but he is enforcing one of the terms of the prenup, which says, well, the prenup says that she will move out of the house within 30 days of filing for divorce. She had filed in May, so she should have been out in June, and she was refusing to leave until she was getting, you know, certain amount of money per month from her husband. But the terms of the prenup says she needs to leave, and she didn't. So she wanted until the end of August so they could have a child support hearing and they could set the amount of money she'll be getting. Kevin Costner wanted her out by July 13th, and the judge gave her till July 31st. So essentially enforcing the prenup, even though it hasn't been found to be valid one way or the other yet.
Now, People magazine reported that according to legal documents filed by Kevin's attorney, there is a chance Christine may have to forfeit her $1.5 million divorce settlement since she is challenging the pair's prenuptial agreement. The story says, and I quote, "If Christine in any manner challenges or assists in the challenge of the validity or enforceability of any provision of this agreement, she shall lose any and all rights to receive any payment, property, or interest from Kevin's pursuant to this agreement." So what exactly does this paragraph mean?
Well, I mean, it's really common in contracts. So it's an incentive to follow your agreement. You know, these two people entered into a contract together, just like all other types of contracts we're familiar with, you know, purchasing real estate or signing a lease. There are contracts, and so is a prenup. And these two people made a deal about how their property would be divided upon divorce. And if one party challenges the validity of that contract, they not only will have to pay all of the other side's fees, but they'll also lose whatever they would have received under the prenup. So in this case, has already received $1.4 million, I think, because that was one of the provisions that upon filing for divorce, she moves out of the house and he gives her $1 million, and somewhere there was another $400,000, but so that she could use that money to get a new place to live, to get set up. And he already paid her. So if she challenges the prenup, he is entitled to that money back. She doesn't get to benefit from the prenup and at the same time challenge it.
So it sounds like that there are ramifications if anybody tries to mess with us.
Well, yes. And that's part of the negotiation and part of any contract. You know, if people get divorced without a prenup, then their family code, their domestic code, whatever state they're in, will decide how money will be shared, how children will be shared, how the property will be shared while a divorce is pending, and then how it will be divided upon final divorce. A prenup is the two people in the marriage making rules for themselves, setting out their own creative terms about this is what will happen with our stuff and our money while the divorce is pending and upon final divorce. And courts are generally in favor of people making their own agreements, and they will generally hold people to those agreements. So if you make an agreement and you want to try to change your mind and back out of it later, there are consequences.
Now, you just listed some great examples of some things that are in prenups. And, you know, Christine is also asking for a reported $248,000 a month in child support. Do prenups have a clause for child support and extracurricular activities if the family maybe one day is going to start a family? Can you put that in there?
No. And actually, I think I misspoke when I said that. What I meant to say was the family code would decide how you share your kids, but a prenup cannot. So parties cannot contract about their children. So if children or child support is in a prenup, that provision is invalid because only the court can decide, or the parties can agree at the time that they are splitting up, what is in the best interest of their children. And there's no way to know that at the time that they are signing the prenup prior to marriage. So they can't make contractual agreements about their children. Child support cannot be included. Spousal support can, lump sum payments can, anything to do with money or property can be included, but not children.
What is a separate regime, and why do high net worth individuals need to make note of this?
Well, separate regimes exist in other countries, not in the U.S. I know they exist in Mexico and in France. And a separate regime is something that the parties can agree to before they get married and basically say, we want to have a separate regime for our marriage, meaning everything you earn, you keep, everything I earn, I keep, everything that I brought into this marriage, I keep, even if it grows in value and so on. So they keep everything separate. And if they do agree to do that, there's basically a state-sponsored prenup that's not customizable. You sign what the state has put out there, and it's it's called a separate regime, but it basically is a prenup. It's just not a customized prenup, and they're totally enforceable in the U.S., or at least in Texas, they're for sure enforceable.
Now, Christina shared private details of the couple's lavish lifestyle and what they spend their income on. And some examples, and I will quickly list, are things such as personal trainers, chefs, landscapers, drivers. Will this information be used when it comes to settlement negotiations?
I'm sure it'll be used. It's not so when the parties split up, the court's not supposed to equalize their lifestyles. They look at several factors. When they're dividing the estate, they're going to look at what is the community estate and what is the separate estate. And then they divide the community estate equitably, not necessarily 50-50, but usually pretty close. But anything that anybody received that owned prior to marriage or received as inheritance or gift during the marriage, that's all separate property and comes off the spreadsheet. It's not divided. They will look at earning capacity for things like spousal support and child support. In California, they do look at lifestyle a lot more than other states. Texas, our alimony statute does not look at the lifestyle at all. It's strictly rehabilitative alimony for somebody who's been out of the workforce and is going to have to figure out how to, you know, get back into the workforce, whether going back to school or getting training, networking. But it was basically geared at housewives and stay-at-home moms who've been out of the workforce for a number of years and they need to get on their feet. So in Texas, it's short-term limited alimony. But in other states like California, they do look at what is the lifestyle to which someone has become accustomed.
Now, since these are two very famous individuals, can prenups include a ban on social media, or can the court enforce a gag order to prevent either side from discussing divorce action?
The prenup absolutely can. And like I said, this can be very customizable. I mean, it can be specific to the parties. So if they were, you know, famous celebrities when they got married, then they may have wanted to include that they, you know, in the event of a divorce, that they are prohibited from discussing the terms of the divorce with the media, on social media, however they want to define it. They can basically create their own gag order, and violation of that is a breach of contract. So it's not like you could go to jail for it and the court couldn't hold you in contempt, but it's a breach of contract and the other person can ask for damages and say, you agreed you wouldn't, you know, post about this or talk to the media, and you did. And so now I want money damages because you did that. A court can impose a gag order. It's rare, and it's not necessarily because they're famous. It's usually to protect the children, because civil lawsuits are public record, and anybody can listen in on them, comment on them. And so courts don't like to make gag orders unless there are things like, you know, trade secrets about a certain company or product. The court can say whatever comes out in the courtroom, we are going to protect that. But short of that, courts don't like to do it. And if they do, violation of a court order is subject to contempt and jail and fines.
Do prenups have an expiration date?
They can. That's just another term that the parties can negotiate. We usually call it a sunset clause. So basically, and sometimes parties will say, look, I want to prove that I am not marrying you for your money. I am not marrying you for immigration rights. I'm happy to sign a prenup, but after we've been married for 5, 10, 15 years, whatever the number is, I think I've proven myself and I want the prenup to go away. And so sometimes we include what's called a sunset clause, that it will expire or be no further force in effect after a certain date.
What about, okay, so let's say a couple has a prenup. Can they also get a postnup?
Yeah, they can. Postnup just means that they are entering into this contract about their marital property after the date of marriage. And people do those all the time for different reasons. I've had people say to me, you know, we're negotiating the prenup and negotiating, we haven't finalized it prior to date of marriage. And they'll say, well, can we just do it as a prenup then? And we'll do it next week after the wedding is passed. And the answer is yes, but you don't have the same kind of leverage once you're already married, because if you want someone to sign it, you say, sign it or I won't marry you. And you don't have that leverage after you've already married.
This is so fascinating. Daryl, for people who want to learn more, how do they get in touch with you?
They can go to my website, WeinmanFamilyLaw.com, Weinman's WEINMAN, FamilyLaw.com. I've got lots of information about prenups and all types of family law.
And don't forget, Daryl is also the founder of Divorce Resort, and she's the author of Your Post-Divorce Journey, Back to Yourself. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this commercial break.
Daryl G. Weinman is the founding partner of Weinman & Associates PC in Austin, Texas. Her nationally renowned full-service law firm provides its clients with unique solutions for transitioning on their new paths. From preparing prenuptial, postnuptial, and cohabitation agreements to divorces, child custodies, child support, parental relocations, and same-sex marriages, Daryl G. Weinman helps families see that divorce is not a failure. It's an opportunity to craft a better future for themselves and their children. Daryl's mission is to see someone who's been bullied grow self-esteem and become independent and successful in their own right. Daryl has seen divorce from all angles, as a child, second wife, stepmother, and a mom who's gone through a divorce. Daryl's The Divorce Resort process is different. Instead of spending months dealing with overwhelming paperwork, spending thousands on lawyer retainer fees, and going to court over and over again, your entire divorce will be settled in 72 hours. Contact Daryl Weinman at 512-472-4040, 512-472-4040.
There is a lot to be said about how you handle your divorce. Now, I get it. The emotions can sometimes feel overwhelming and overpowering, especially when you are in public and peppered with questions. But for a moment, I want you to be on the outside looking in and see what I mean about this statement. How you handle your divorce speaks volumes. Let's look at two examples trending in the headlines. Oscar winner Reese Witherspoon is on the August 2023 cover of Harper's Bazaar, where she is cautiously opening up about her divorce from Jim Toth, her second husband who she was married to for 12 years and shares a child with. Now, prior to marrying Jim, Reese was married to actor Ryan Felipe for 9 years, and they share two grown children together. Now, in this interview, Reese compares her two situations by saying, "It's interesting what happened to me. When I was divorced before, the tabloid media got to tell people how I was feeling or how I was processing, and it felt out of control. To be able to talk directly to people about what's going on in my life and share it in a way that I want is really great, and I feel so much more in control of what's happening." The actress also added, "It's a vulnerable time for me too." Now, notice how Reese carefully chooses her words to acknowledge, yes, she is getting a divorce, but she's also doing her best to keep things where they belong, behind closed doors. And then there is the Kevin Costner-Christine Bamberger divorce, which, as you know, has been dominating the headlines now for weeks. And lots of personal information is being leaked, such as details of their extravagant lifestyle. She allegedly gets plastic surgery. But the latest development that I want to touch upon on just appeared in the Daily Mail. Now, the publication spoke to a source connected to Christine who reportedly said Kevin is on a mission to make Christine's life hell for actually going through the divorce. And the mudslinging doesn't stop there. Christine must move out of the marital home. Kevin must pay over $129,000 a month in child support. And on August 2nd, Kevin and Christine will be back in court regarding their prenuptial agreement she is challenging. Divorce sucks. I get it. A lot more than you know. But you and your spouse need to take control of what people know about your private business, because the less people know, the better it is for everyone, especially your children. If you want to share what's happening with a confidant, you should. We all need somebody to talk to. We all need somebody to lean on. And we all need somebody we trust. But if anyone asks you about your situation, be tasteful and protect your children from the unnecessary gossip. That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Until next time.